We have the pleasure of having Reverend Dr. Lori Bolster with us. You're still muted, Lori. And we always look forward to you being here with us. And I'm particularly excited because you're talking about the same chapter I talked about last time. And I found it inspiring to bring Ernest Holmes' thoughts up to date. And the majority of the people who were contemporary that I quoted were women. And so it's not just man's greatest ideas, it's humanity's greatest ideas. And I'm looking forward to hearing your take on it, Lori.
Well, thank you. I always enjoy coming here and talking with y'all. Yes, I thought you laid a pretty strong foundation a couple of weeks ago, and I just realized I may need to plug in at some point. And so I thought, oh, I'll start there and then go forward. So basically this morning I'm going to touch on Holmes's thoughts, also some changes that have occurred over time, and some newer great ideas. And so Holmes was studying the process of human reasoning, you know, searching for things that were self-evident truths. He's looking at the evolution of thought from lower forms of thought to higher forms of consciousness and intelligence and awareness. And also pointing out that in this evolutionary process, everything had to have a starting point. They had to have an initial involvement. And something with these discoveries is a discernment process that could be useful. Buddhists use a form of meditation that's called analytic meditation. So there's not just meditation where the mind is still and see what arises on the stillness, but or not. But also there's a form where we can sit with these concepts that Holmes has been exploring. And he may have been doing that, calling it prayer work, or he may have been calling it meditation, but just a soaking through of concepts. And so we can take a look at the impact of this reasoning process, of the ideas that we come across from various places, what different people think about life in general, about spiritual development, about their own self, their own existence, why they're here, their purposes, etc. And we can take a look at this the impact of reasoning on what happens then with what people believe. And this all comes through consciousness in a constant evolutionary process. Some of this is from what we're reading. So we gain information and ideas that come in from externals through reading or from talking to other people, talking about what we're immediately reading or thinking about, or just listening to what other people are reading and thinking about. And we have this array of ideas and discoveries and educational processes, things where people just learn something and want to share it. And we have all these opportunities for things coming in. Well, I also heard recently, there's no obstacles, only opportunities. And so we have all these opportunities for learning. And we've talked here before about spiral dynamics, where cultures, societies start out at a relatively low level of evolutionary consciousness in terms of just trying to stay alive, trying to eat enough, find enough food, try to stay out of whatever weather is battering them, or stay away from the animals that want to eat them or other people that want to eat them, and stay safe, stay alive, continue to exist. And then moving up this evolutionary path into, oh, there's other people. Oh, if you're not the same as me, we probably have to kill you. You have to believe and behave and value the same things we do, or you are bad and we have to destroy you. Up to, oh, you may have something to offer us. We may have something to offer you. And this gradual evolutionary process of understanding of people and interactions and interrelatedness, and discovering why we're here, and oh, you believe something different, well, that's okay, you can do that. And we are growing this, and you have those things from the sea, maybe we can do some exchanges. maybe we can collaborate on some things. Or, oh, these other people, maybe we can get together to hold them off because they want to take our children or something. And gradually evolving into the society we typically experience now and the belief systems we experience into one of, oh, we're all in this together. The one that Holmes is talking about, that there is this higher consciousness, an understanding of a oneness, an understanding of we are all sharing in this life. It, and now the cosmos and what the James Webb Telescope shows us is like, oh my goodness. And they're talking about things that are hundreds or millions, I don't know, light years away. And it's like, I got no way of wrapping my mind around that. It's just, no, I just look at the pretty pictures and think, wow, these little smudges are galaxies. Oh my goodness, I love it. I just love it endlessly. But anyway, so we evolved to the point though where everybody gets a seat at the table. And now we've taken it kind of that pendulum swung a long way, and now there's pushback to all the diversity, equity, and inclusion trainings and discussions, and their pushback is too much, and oh, we push, but we need more. It's like, okay. But gradually, things will settle to some kind of set point where people, one would hope, everybody mostly is getting what they need in order to live and be able to go ahead and do the pursuit of happiness and well-being in society and find ways of getting one's own learning and education and employment and financial and comfort and physical needs met, as well as spiritual needs. And so we've got along like this, and Holmes was approaching these kind of conversations by reading everything under the sun. He says he's reading the Upanishads, Plotinus, Plato, the Bible, the Vedas, the Book of the Dead, the Bhagavad Gita. He's reading everything under the sun. He says he's reading six of these books at a time, but he doesn't read a book. No, he reads a bit of this one, a bit of this, and this, and this, and this, and this, and then he goes back. He's reading them all in rotation. And so he says he's doing this so that he doesn't get on a single track and stay there. So he says he's doing this because he doesn't want to get a hold of, oh, this author or this way of believing, this way of being is what I'm going to settle into, to the exclusion of the rest of these. They exist. I know they exist. I respect them. That's fine. Love and peace. But here's where I'm going to settle into. He's not doing that. He says he's reading everything in rotation in order to specifically not do that. So he's got all of these ideas alive in his experience, in his daily life, every day, all the time. He has access to all of this all the time. I just think that's fascinating. He's culling and synthesizing as a way of being from readings. And he's looking for what he calls the persistent facts. What is showing up? Sometimes you hear it about commonalities. The thing that's showing up, or the perennial philosophy, the thing that just shows up in everywhere, all the beliefs. And he's looking for those things, the persistent facts from what he calls outstanding persons that we can accept as valid and real. Remembering that whatever valid and real means, humans are writing all these things. Humans have written, everything that's written was written by humans. I don't know where some people think the Bible comes from. Maybe they think it dropped out of the sky. It's the word of God and dropped it right straight out of heaven and somebody caught it and then started to share it. I don't know. But humans wrote everything. And we have no originals from 2,000 years ago. We have copies that were translated, and then copies of translations, with humans getting their fingerprints and their minds touching over all of these things. So it's fascinating. And so to be able to sit back and read and look for where are the persistent facts, where are the concepts that keep showing up, and now, it's, we think, well, we could do that. We could read six books. Except now we have thousands of books on how we should be, or how to learn, or how to improve ourselves, or how to learn whatever it is we want to learn that will improve who we are and how we function. There is so much available now, especially online, including facts, including untruths, including pure bullshit, and just inconceivable quantities and varieties of opinions and speculation. And finally you get to the point, well, what value is that? You're going to rotate all through all of this. And you have to know something before being able to read this stuff and call the value from everything. And then there's an understanding or discernment of, okay, so now I have this value, and precisely for what purpose is this value? There was a book published, might have been as much as 20 years ago now. It was called On Bullshit. And bullshit is when somebody is trying to persuade you without any regard for the truth, that they don't care about the truth or what's false. They just say anything. Lying is when you know what the truth is and you're trying to hide it. That's different from bullshit. Bullshit is where you don't care about the truth. You just say anything. And that is having an impact in the world, where people will do that kind of thing for entertainment value, or to distribute confusion, or to be able to hold on to what's real and true themselves and have everybody else in a level of confusion. Who knows? But anyway, it is true that if we know nothing about something, we may not even be able to see it. We may not recognize it when it's right in front of us. If we don't know a thing about an evolutionary process of what's next, we may not know it when it's right, when it's coming into being, because we don't have enough experience or knowledge to know what it is that's emerging. We don't know what it is. You know, when we were kids, I used to hear somebody say something nasty to somebody else, and a kid would say, "It takes one to know one." There may be some truth in that. I don't know if you've seen that video from a few years ago where there was a basketball game going on, and the test was count how many times the ball is passed. And as you watch the video, people count how many times the ball is passed and see if they got it right. And then the question that is asked is, did you see the gorilla? And during the video, during this basketball game, a person in a gorilla suit walks slowly across the court. And some enormous percentage of people never saw the gorilla. They were so focused on counting how many times the ball has passed, they never saw the gorilla at all. And that, I mean, it is a full-size human in a gorilla suit walking across the court and looking around and not running, not fast, just meandering across the court. And it's just stunning. And what it was an exercise in showing how eyewitnesses are not necessarily real dependable. But it also goes for this, that sometimes if we are not ready, we can't discern an emerging nextness for our own spiritual development or what's potential for us. We just don't know. But there's one mind, one creative force. And with our own thinking and our own imagination, we get to participate in that creative process. And so then the next question, of course, is, well, what are you doing with your fine mind? What are you doing with it all the time? How are you nurturing it so it can participate in a useful, enlightening process? Now, it doesn't have to be. You can choose to, no, I'm not interested. I'm just going to grow my garden and I don't care about the rest of this, or whatever it is you're engaged in. And we get choices. But then we have an individual, and they become a little individual silo. They are here. They are part of our society, but they're little individual silos. And then there are the people, like the folks that Carolyn was talking about. These people working for the airlines who were aware, attentive, kind, calm, centered, who knows where they really come from and what they're like the rest of the time, but right here, right now, they needed to be able to be present in that way, and they did it. And I'm noticing more and more people who are just calm and considerate. They go the extra step. They'll offer something. They'll, you know, people that there's a calm kind of negotiation of space and time and effort, and it's been interesting. And of course, I then wonder, well, maybe part of that's just me. Maybe I'm showing up differently. And that may, that, you know, that's the likely possibility. But I don't know that that's all of it. I think that there's something going on in society where people are starting to ratchet down, turn down that attenuator to, you know, attenuation to what's the person in front of them and dealing with each other. And what do you need right now? How can what I'm doing, I'm serving you in a bakery shop. What can I do for you right now? I can let you know, oh, when you heat this up, only do it about 5 seconds at a time. We'll watch what's happening with it and then do another 5 seconds. It's like, well, thank you. That's kind. That's wonderful. And so how do we get ourselves in a place centered in that kind of a way of being that we are supporting ourselves so that we can grow into that being even farther to find out who we really are as a human? Because what humans and humanity can be is we see it. It happens. We sense it. We experience it. But how do we continue it? How do we continue that growth? And so there are some vast changes that are happening over time with Holmes. And yes, he's talking and quoting people from long ago or 50, 100, 70 years ago. And that doesn't mean that what he's quoting isn't correct. Of course, these persistent truths are persistent truths today as well. How would he be functioning? Now, he talks about the teacher who won't accept students below 40 back in the day because they're too young, they're not mature enough to learn the material. And now, and at that time, there were some professions who, if you're over 40, you're too old to learn the material. And that's now, that's way becoming, in some fields, that's about it. I mean, the 20-year-olds are running the show. People who grew up, these computer systems are part of who they are. They just know how they go. And it's like, okay, I'll just keep doing what I know how to do. But truths are truths. And our understandings of the perceptions of truth can change. I read a bumper sticker recently that really just went with my own perception of a true thing. Bumper sticker said, they didn't burn, and we're talking about Salem back in the day, they didn't burn witches. They burned women. I never thought of it that way. That just, wow, that changes perception of a fact, of a reality. Yeah. I never thought of it that way. And when I do, it's like, hey. So, imagine Ernest Holmes on a computer hooked to the internet. He can scroll through 30 books at a time in rotation. I mean, he could blow his own mind. You know, and plus, along with everything else that's available on the internet. On the internet, we are so fortunate now. Ernest Holmes could run across lists for how to improve one's life. 20 simple ways to fall asleep, 25 foods to avoid, 10 simplified tips for a better relationship, 10 best gut foods, 23 fun and easy side hustles, 10 pieces of advice you need to hear right now, 50 ways to be a better parent, 75 healthy habits that will improve every aspect of your life. Unless it makes you crazy first. Anyway, I'm thinking you could print out all these lists and tape them on a wall and then do them all of them, all year for a year, take notes, and then write a book at the end of your experience. And you could become a popular bestseller. Or you could be exhausted or make yourself crazy. So some newer great ideas. Along this path, There's just too much. Maybe the next great idea is to say, okay, that's all available to me right now. So let's go back to the way it was once upon a time, thousands of years ago, or even not that long ago in some places, 50, 100 years ago. Some rural communities right now come back to, how do I discern what's true for one's own self? How on earth to manage all this, much less synthesize it? We know, and complicating factors, we no longer have a standard or foundational shared morality. Previously, organizations like the Boy Scouts would create it because they had a pledge. So all these young men grew up knowing they were trustworthy, loyal, helpful, friendly, courteous, kind, obedient, cheerful, thrifty, brave, clean, and reverent. Thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of boys grew up knowing that pledge. And there are other organizations that have the same kind of things. And there was kind of a shared understanding of how to behave. And we don't have that anymore, partly because people are not going to churches. Their church attendance is dwindling. People are believing different kinds of things. They do have spiritual, they have a spiritual connection, but it's not all the same. People are from different backgrounds. People have moved around now. They didn't stay where they grew up. They've moved around. They're no longer with their family that they grew up with. And so there's no foundational shared morality, way of being, values, and everything about other people is different depending on where one's own self stands. And Connie quoted that, don't block your power with your current understanding. And so what we have is a current understanding about the world and how it works and our place in it and what we're all about. We have to stay willing to stay open, to learn, but also to arise things from inside. And that when we're listening to a teacher, we don't want to disregard it just because, yeah, I've heard that before. Oh, wait a minute. Hearing it now with who I am now, what does it mean for me now? How do I incorporate it into my life? What meaning does it have for me now as I bring it into my life and how I'm functioning, what I'm trying to do now? It's important to not just immediately say, oh, that's wrong. Well, maybe look at it from different perspectives. Maybe it's coming from a perspective that one hasn't heard before or is a little different from what I would normally agree with, but is there something in this that is good for me now? Because I'm changing. Nothing is the same as it was yesterday, including the table that this computer is sitting on. It may look the same, but if you leave it alone for long enough, it ain't going to look the same. Everything is changing. Nothing stays exactly the same from moment to moment to moment to moment. Everything is changing. So we have to think, what does this new idea or this thing I'm hearing again that I seem to have heard before, or whatever it is that somebody's offering me, that, oh, that's different. How can it enhance my life and my ability to affect the world as we're all moving towards greater integrity and being kinder? That there's no need to, or even ability to reconcile some differences that or apparent conflicts. It all, as we've heard, transmutes. You don't have to make it resolved. It's just now something different. And I always remember that Berlin Wall coming down like that overnight. Nobody saw that coming, but a series of weird events happened and that wall came down. It's like stunning, blew everybody's mind. How can that happen? Massive change can happen. So a healthy state of mind can help lead to us towards, you can call it enlightenment. I don't know a better word. Enlightenment, the clarity of mind and heart, and alignment. And the Buddhists say that getting there is supported by maintaining an intention, a way of life that includes generosity, ethical self-discipline, patience, perseverance, an ability to focus, and wisdom, a discerning awareness. And if we can calm ourselves down and be aware of all the ordinary things in life that are going right, sometimes we get so captivated by the sensation or the things that are all about safety and security. Now we have an assassination attempt, and then we have gun shootings, and then we have this other thing that happens, and on and on. And so we just need to settle down. But how do we control our own minds? Can you? I know Carolyn Mace years ago, and I've said that before here, she said, how do we think we can control our mind or anything else external to us with our, our energetic flow or whatever, when we can't focus on anything for 10 seconds, we can't hold our mind on something for 10 seconds, or if we manage 10 seconds, you can't do it for another 10. And so getting our minds under control so that we are able to focus on the things that we want to focus on, which can be our own self, our own growth, our own learning, our own discovery process, our own abilities to simply notice all the things that are going right. This table continues to hold up this computer. No question. The sun is shining through the window on the dog and he's happy. The chairs rock. The mountain is still there. The door, I turn the handle and the door opens. The seat I'm sitting on is working. All these little things that are just ordinary, everyday things that are working. Most of the time, we turn the key and car starts, or push the button, or just get in, maybe. They work most of the time. And the really ordinary things that are pretty straightforward, like tables and chairs and doorknobs, they just keep working. And yet, we just blow past them like, doesn't matter. Yeah, it does matter. Oh, we're surrounded by things that overall are working. And Connie was mentioning about that there's power in alignment. Well, that sounds great. How do you get there? Well, there's a few things that you can do. And of course, one of them is get your mind under control so it doesn't behave like a squirrel on crack. Do, 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 do. Just like, psh. Meditation. And I keep coming back to this, and so does a large part of the world. Meditation, there's lists of medical benefits to meditation and interactional benefits, just human benefits. But by meditating regularly, you learn to be able to process at length when you want to. You learn so that you can sort and synthesize efficiently without distraction. You got to train your brain so that when you sit down and say, okay, this is what I'm going to do right now, that's what you do. You're not immediately up, oh, right, I need to start the laundry or whatever I need to do. And also then, when you get that kind of, when you can get to that clarity and alignment upon demand, then you have the spaciousness to sit and have realizations come arising. And so you don't have to be looking at lists online or books to tell you how to improve yourself. Or what's real and what's not, what's true and what's not, and what's bullshit and what's not, and what's cruel and what's not, and what's kindness, and how to be kind, how to connect with people. You sit with this and then comes to mind, that's what's true for me. And that's how I incorporate it in my life, because I have control of my mind, so I want to continue to remember these things off and on all day long. And then you get to do that. And we know that interpersonal relationships support healthier, longer lives. And Tara Brach also says, I thought this is fascinating, relationships are grounding. We talk to people who know us and we know them. We exchange ideas and feelings. We vent, if even to people we don't know, because they're willing to listen to us. And we do these exchanges. And so relationships become grounding. We have a connection. We have what she called a co-regulation. We help each other handle whatever's going on, the emotions. know, we can help each other settle down and realize, oh, okay, right here, right now, I'm okay. Right here, right now, I'm okay. And it's important to remember, we say that you are whole, perfect, and complete as is. And here's a concept for you. That means there is nothing wrong with you. And it's amazing how many things we think are wrong with ourselves that we don't like, or we wish were different, or whatever. You are whole, perfect, complete as is. And there is nothing wrong with you. You can learn and grow, but fundamentally, there is nothing wrong with you. You may have a tweaky thing, I'm going to have a knee replaced, but there is nothing wrong with me. I might find something, oh, I'd like to do that differently. Okay, then I can do that. I can make that change. What's really stunning, somebody I read was talking about that we have a place in the world, and our place in the world, our presence, spans 200 years. It starts with the oldest person we knew when we were a child, grandparent, great-grandparent, when they were born. And it continues through the 100th birthday of the youngest person we have ever held. So the oldest person we knew through the 100th birthday of the youngest person we've held. Our lives, our own presence has touched that whole span. We're here. We have a presence. We have some purpose. We can love without any expectation of what else is around. And that's how you end up loving the people across the counter from you at an airline or anywhere else. This energetic flow of just what's called unconditional, but it's without expectation. It's just love. It's just love for love's sake. That feeling. And anybody, you know, if somebody's in serious trauma, obviously they're going to be challenged. They need some of that to themselves. But anybody who's not sitting in that kind of a thing can do this all the time, anywhere, with anyone. So people are all different. We cannot assume shared values and understandings. We can just love without any expectation. If we know ourselves and we have clarity and control over our own emotions and our discerning minds, and we can continue to grow greater alignment and greater sensitivities, it makes a difference to people around us and to the world. And so I would like to offer that perhaps we can control our mind, train our brain to control our mind to be how we want to be, to remember all the time, and to show up how we want to show up all the time. Thank you.